on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Baltimore residents Eleanor Haley and Lisa Williams run a blog called What's Your Grief that provides resources and support for people grieving the loss of a loved one. Both work in the field of mental health, but their personal experiences have as much impact on their blog as their professional backgrounds. The bloggers have a national reach, including other psychology professionals who use their posts to help grieving patients. Eleanor Haley and Lisa Williams join me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much.
So it's good to have you here. So, Lisa, tell us what the blog talks about.
Well, in its most basic form, I guess it talks about grief. But what we've found from when we started is that there is an endless supply of different topics within the scope of grief. So we have been writing for a little over a year now, and I think we've just scratched the surface of all of the different issues within grief and bereavement where we are now.
So, Eleanor, the process of grieving is a very individual endeavor.
Absolutely. And I think that's one thing that people in society don't typically understand, because they hear the most common grief theory is the Kubler-Ross five-stage grief theory. They think that grief is going to follow a linear timeline. It's going to hit these stages, and when I get to the final stage, I'll be good. I'll be okay. And what people actually find is that when they are grieving, there is a range of responses, a range of emotions, a range of just crazy reactions and feelings they've never experienced before. And their grief is as an individual as who they are and the relationship they had with that person. So their sibling or somebody who is grieving the same loss may grieve in a totally different way. So it's absolutely very individual process, which I think can be kind of confusing to people when they first start the grief journey.
Because Dr. Kubler-Ross back in 1969 was really suggesting that we all do it essentially the same way. We go through these five stages: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then finally acceptance.
Right.
You know, and people will say, well, you don't do them necessarily in that order, but you eventually get to acceptance.
Right. And I think that, you know, when they first put that theory out there, they, you know, over time, people hear them listed in this linear way. When their theory, you know, says you can bounce back and forth, revisit, you don't always go in the same linear pattern. But just the way it's applied in modern society, we typically think that it's going to hit these marks.
I think additionally what's important to understand about Kubler-Ross is that when she first put out this theory, though it later got adapted to people grieving a loss, it was initially intended for people who had been diagnosed with a terminal illness and how they were accepting their own loss. So that was initially where the stages came from. It was then later adapted to how we grieve a loss. But it was always thought to be these clear five stages, ending in acceptance, which I think is really deceptive for people because they think it will be tied up with a nice little bow and they'll be in the acceptance phase and they'll kind of close that chapter of their life and move on, which I don't think is ever what Kubler-Ross intended, but is certainly the way it's been adapted. Later grief theory has really now come to accept the idea that it's not going to get tied up with a little bow. There's going to be an ongoing relationship with that loss and that person.
Lisa Williams and Eleanor Haley run a blog called What's Your Grief on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So let's talk a little bit about that. You've written a blog about a theory called continuing bonds theory of grief. And this is really diametrically opposed to this notion of acceptance. I have a friend who wrote a book called A Broken Heart Still Beats when her son was killed tragically in a car accident. She wrote it along with her friend Anne McCracken. Her name is Mary Semmel. And it's a collection of prose and poetry and essays by people who have lost children in particular. Mm-hmm. So there's Shakespeare and Richard Ford and Mark Twain and Abraham Lincoln, and people who you wouldn't think have lost a child.
Right.
And the crux of it is that, you know, you go on, but there isn't really any this notion of acceptance. Oh, you know, and you move on, this notion that time will heal all wounds. I mean, Eleanor, what's this continuing bonds theory say exactly?
The thing that I think people find the most comforting about continuing bonds is finding a way to incorporate that loved one that they've lost into their everyday life, their remembrance, into their rituals, and into just how they go on to their day-to-day activities. And it's just finding a way to stay connected with that person through remembering, through honoring, and through starting a different relationship with that person.
And Lita, I mean, how do you do that without people saying, oh, you're nuts, you know?
Well, I think that's the biggest challenge for people is they think if it's 5 years later and I'm still talking about my son that I lost, that people are going to think I'm crazy, I haven't coped with the loss, I haven't moved on. So I think people become very self-conscious about remembering and talking about their loved one. One of the things from the beginning, I think, is connecting with other people who've had similar losses to realize that most people are maintaining some sort of continuing bond with that person. They have ways that they remember them in their everyday life. Maybe it's at holidays, maybe it's at birthdays, maybe it's a ritual that they just do every day to spend some time honoring and thinking of that person. Maybe it's just a little display they have in their home. There's a huge range of things that people can do. But realizing that that is the norm, it's not the exception to the rule, I think is really important for that to happen early on. And I think it's really important that that communication happens between family members, so that everybody in the family realizes that we're all remembering together and they're not individually and silently remembering, which is something that can happen within families.
Let's talk a little bit, Eleanor, about this, the importance of ritual. The military in particular is very good at this, you know, sort of ritualizing what happens when they encounter a comrade who's fallen in combat. What have we learned from the military about the importance of ritual?
There are these rites and rituals that we expect to have happen when somebody dies, because that's how we honor, and that's what, you know, their years of service mean. That's how we honor them in their passing. And these are really important things for a lot of people. We don't really like the word closure, but I think those different rites are important for people to feel like they've had a chance to say goodbye.
So, Lisa Williams, when it comes to rituals like funerals, you write about some things that are changing from these traditional rituals. Give us some examples of what's happening on that score.
One of the things that's happening is funerals are actually going back into the home, which is something that we saw, you know, 100 years ago. We have distanced ourselves from death in many ways. We put it into a funeral home. We kind of wanted to be removed from that. And people now are taking a step back and saying, maybe I want to remember this person in the place that they lived, in the place that was meaningful for them. So we have something now called death midwives, who are sort of funeral directors that orchestrate funerals in your home or somewhere else meaningful for you. It might be the bar. It might be, you know, his favorite place where he went to watch a sporting event, things like that. So really thinking differently about whether these have to be limited to churches and funeral homes and going outside of that.
A few weeks ago, I ran into a friend at the grocery store. We're standing there at the deli counter, and I say, hey, how you doing? You know, and she breaks into tears. And she had just that moment come from the hospice where her mother-in-law had passed away. And there I was, feeling like the dope that I actually am. But I had no idea what to tell her, what to say, you know. You write about this. You write about on your blog about what nurses can talk to with grieving families about. What are some of the suggestions you have for those kinds of situations?
I think, I guess, what we can take two steps back with any griever and any person seeking to support a griever, it's supporting that person in what they need at that time. And for you at the deli counter, it's tough to know that. And I think that, you know, just we encourage people who are kind of put in those positions to just say, you know, I'm very sorry. I can't imagine what you must be feeling right now. We caution people from using any phrases that begin with at least, or that minimize people's loss by saying, oh, well, you know, they're in a better place, and making assumptions about what that person is, the meaning that person is making of the loss. For people who are trying to support somebody in the long term or in that immediate, like a nurse or a family member trying to support another family member or a neighbor trying to support a neighbor, just, you know, identifying those things that they need the most and trying to help them fill those holes, because a lot of people don't want to ask for help. And so it's if you can help them do one thing to make their life easier so they can focus on their loss and their grief, you've done something.
Well, certainly to anybody who's listening to us this morning, if you're going through a grieving process now, we are sorry for your loss.
Absolutely.
And we appreciate your both coming this morning. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Eleanor Haley and Lisa Williams, they live in Baltimore and they run What's Your Grief, a resource for grieving families and friends. We'll post a link to their blog on our website. Come to wypr.org/Marilyn Morning.